His name's Eric. I'm alcoholic.
Hey, Eric.
Guess that's working. All right. Thank you for having me come out tonight. Thanks for the guys, Walter and James, for driving up. Lynn, good to see you.
Hi.
Yeah. Look at this. And a lot of people that I know here. It's good to be here. And my sobriety date is January 20th of 2000. I have a sponsor and I have a home group down in Richmond. It's where I'm from, where I'm residing, say. It's the Outlaw Safecracker Group, and we meet on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 o'clock. Many of you have been there, but you know, it's not too far. Come on down and see us. Stacking up a pretty sweet September of speakers. So anyway, it'll be fun. It always is fun. We have a solid group. We've got a pretty good amount of men and women now at this point. And we've always kind of leaned, you know, more just guys, I guess, in the home group kind of thing. But it's not just that too, just everybody seems to be on board with what's going on. We just had a kind of a day conference recently and everybody was just, I just kind of watched what was going on. I was trying to help our history speaker kind of get his audio stuff together. I mean, not like I'm going to be some kind of genius on that or anything, but whatever. I'm just kind of fiddling around with him and I'm watching everybody kind of run around, just like an organized, calm. It was just great. Everybody's just on the same page. There was no mass big get together meetings about making little minuscule decisions and all this crap. And it was just like people were just seeing it getting done, got to get it done. It was just great. And I've been in that group since the beginning and I've seen it when it hasn't been like that. So anyway, it was a nice afternoon. It was really good because everybody showed up. So participation is good. That's a good thing. It's one of the things that all the sponsors I've had and people in AA have shown me. And then, you know, also I think some people kind of told me, directed me, but it's been the biggest thing of my sobriety is participation and commitment and practicing those things. It's not something, well, I mean, I'll give drinking kind of a fair pull in this little pitch here. You know, alcohol does command your attention, you know, I had my attention 100% and I followed its directions perfectly. So I have it in me to take direction and to show up whenever, you know, something is asking for it. I certainly did for the drink. And it's almost like when I come to AA, kind of had to be reconditioned and really just to shift all of whatever that is and just kind of surrender to what people are doing here. And I'm sure that's why I'm at least sober today. You may have had a different speaker tonight, but that's why I'm sober standing behind this podium. It's because I started doing some things that I didn't know that I should be doing or that would help me get sober and stay sober and to change and to kind of participate in life in a totally different way. I think that's a true statement. I do participate in life in a completely different way today. I say these things, I'm like, yeah, that might sound kind of good. Not like I'm thinking that, but like I'll say something. I'm like, wait a minute. It's like I'm fact checking the whole time. So bear with me. I mean, I'm not trying to be goofy or anything, but I do want to talk to you about the way I drank. And there wasn't like a big car crash kind of moment, but I'll tell you kind of about some turn of events that happened for me that I started thinking about sobriety and certainly talk about what's been going on in sobriety with me. And hopefully about this power that most of the time these days, I don't think I know anything really about God, or I've been pretty doubtful about prayer. And most of the people around me are like, yeah, you just, cause you can't see it or you're not getting what you want. It's not so much the doubt, but maybe just, well, we'll talk about that. And I don't know. It's just been an interesting ride so far. I mean, when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, desperation was abundant, you know, and in the sense of just, you know, physical sobriety, when you first arrive at it, whether it's by the force of the court system, the man, the treatment center, whatever it might be, or your own willpower, it's very interesting because it's unlike being inebriated all the time. It's a whole different environment. It's a different world. It's a different experience. And sobriety continued to happen day after day. And I was just overwhelmed with different things that were going on. And it was, I feel like at that point, I was really just like, oh my God, yeah, God is this and that and whatever. And all these things are happening. And that probably was very true. And it's just, I don't know, time is an interesting thing. And so is experience. So we'll just kind of see where we get going. I'm here tonight because a gentleman asked me to be here this evening. I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous since 2000 and I drink like a pig. I really do. That's why I'm your speaker. I'm a real alcoholic. I have an allergy and I have an obsession with drinking that knows no bounds. And there's nothing that ever gets in the way between me and drinking, ever. I'll do anything, and I'll make sure it happens. And if that requires, you know, breaking the law and all the just a horrible behavior, the manipulation, the selfishness, and just the long list of things that we are and do, I participate in all that in order to make sure that I'm going to be able to drink. And I don't think that it started off that way so much. But when I was in, I was a teenager in high school, starting to drink with people around me, and it really began to do something for me, you know, in the beginning. It didn't like start off like what I just described. It was like when I started to drink, I really felt close to other human beings. I didn't feel like I was being judged so much. I didn't feel like, you know, I didn't have a chance with a girlfriend, or I didn't feel like I had a chance, you know, was being excluded from friendships. I just felt more like I was going to be okay in a very over the top sort of a way. Only the comfort that sweet Jack Daniels brings. Let's just put it that way, you know. And it was just unbelievable. And I just began to have a kind of a spiritual experience. That's what it does. It's just a very over the top kind of reaction. And I grew up in a home that was a sober AA home. My mom had gotten sober when I was a kid. I was familiar with AA as far as I went to some, you know, we were taken to some of the meetings when we were little kids, and I didn't know much about it. And I just knew this is AA is what she did because she said she couldn't drink, and that's where people go to get sober. But there was a lot of warnings in my household about drinking, and I would push that stuff aside for a chance to be in with you. You know, like I could care less what she's saying. I needed to make some friends, and, you know, I just needed to feel okay. And that's what alcohol, it just does the impossible for this spirit inside of me that just seems forever broken. I mean, as long as I can remember as a kid, I just could not figure it out with people. It's just crazy. It's horrible. Really baffling. And I just, there's a lot of conflict with other, you know, people and kids and schools and just, you know, I was always in counseling because I couldn't get along with my mom or whatever, you know. There's always some counselor trying to tell me it's my fault. I'm like, she's crazy. God, you know, just nuts. I just didn't even know that I needed a drink. You know, I really did. And I started drinking. Like I said, all that stuff started to get resolved. And I got out of high school. So I thought, you know, when I get out of high school and I'm drinking, like I'm a daily drinker at that point. I mean, my brother and I figured out that you could drink after school. We'd go off, run off in the woods in Williamsburg, just get faced all, you know, every day, drink on the way to school, thought that was funny. I mean, we're just participating in all this. We just saw it was all one big party. I mean, I guess you can kind of get away with some of that stuff when you're a kid. I get out of high school and, you know, I leave high school a daily drinker. I mean, I was drinking like a half a gallon of vodka, a couple half a gallons a week. That's a lot for anybody. I'm like thinking to myself, man, if I could just drink a little less vodka, maybe. But that's a lot, you know. And I was recovering from, you know, drinking all that. I mean, I wasn't wake up in the morning and, I don't know, run off with your friends and do stuff. And then you get a little older and that amount of drinking just starts to kind of take a toll. And I was hanging out with some people in Richmond, and I moved to California with them, and I tried to make a career in an industry in Los Angeles for a while, and it didn't work out. My drinking at that point was starting to affect my relationships. I didn't see it that way. What I saw was people were on my case. They are not respecting my ideas. You know, nobody's listening to me. It's always somebody else's fault. Nobody respects me. You know, it was really, you could kind of put a little chink in the whole drinking thing, but I felt like so alone out there that drinking with whatever other people I could find out there to drink like me was just the only comfort I had. So I had to leave that situation. Alcohol would not let me stay there for that long. And I came back to Virginia. I started working in the restaurant business, and I really fell in with a kind of crowd of people that a lot of them are quite like me, you know, fistfuls of dollars, running to the bar after you get off work, you know, every night. And I was like, man, this is it. This is great. I am working. I'm making all kinds of money. I'm hanging out at all these bars. You know, there's all kinds of cute girls involved. And this is just perfect. This is, I just was just an extension of high school to some degree. And I just didn't really see any kind of problem with this. And I did that for about a year or so in Williamsburg. I did try to get into school at Richmond. I did. I got into VCU, came to Richmond, and I was in my early 20s at that point. And I went to VCU for a few years throughout the 90s at different times, borrowed a whole lot of money to go to school, still paying that crap off, geez. And my drinking changed, beginning to change a day at a time over a period of time. I was already starting to wet the bed, which is one thing that started kind of showing up. And I was a daily blackout drinker in addition to that. So all this is happening. So every day I'm just blacking out, I'm drinking, I'm going to work. And the doctor's opinion describes it perfectly for somebody like me. You know, Sammy G was my sponsor for a while. She pointed this out. We got to this part in the book and I was like, oh man, this whole cycle that it talks about in the doctor's opinion is exactly what goes on with me. Because I would come to somewhere around, I don't know, noon or something, you know, 1 o'clock. I'd wake up, I'd still be drunk. I'd start this process of like detoxing until I had to go to work. And maybe I'd done something the night before that was kind of remorseful, you know, as I always did. And maybe I would make some kind of arrangement about drinking less or not drinking. And I would get to work, completely forget about the arrangement. I would start drinking at the end of my shift. I'd buy some booze on the way home. I'd find myself at the bar, the after hours club, making first call at the bar at 6:30 in the morning. And then I'd come home, pass out, and start all over again. And that was how I was living my life, you know, 5 to 7 nights out of the week for like a decade. It wasn't really any, there's no glamorous car crash story for you. I just was a slob, man. I just was that lifestyle just repeated itself every day. You know, there was all kinds of tragic things that were going on, you know, as a result of that. And I don't know that any of that stuff was that important. You know, you may or may not have had some tragic kind of things to you, but I think the great tragedy for all alcohol, and I can't speak for all alcoholics, but this is just kind of what I see and what I have seen. What is more tragic than losing the ability to control something that was going to kill you? Like, we all have that in common. It talks about that as well. You know, I'm unable to take a drink without setting off this phenomenon of craving. And that's what I have in common with all alcoholics. It just doesn't matter what happens, really. That's just crazy. Like, that's going on inside of me. That is the bottom. All the other stuff is just like material, really. And it's like, I don't have the ability to control the drinking, you know, which just, it doesn't exist anymore. It didn't for a long time. And I wasn't concerned with it. You know, I was resolved to the fact of being, of these things happening. And I think that primarily was because just what I believed alcohol was doing for me. I mean, it was to the end. I was always getting a little bit out of the first drink. You know, it was just enough to provide me a sense of hope. And there was such hope in drinking. I just was like so excited just to walk to 7-Eleven, just knowing I had enough money to get it. It was unbelievable. I'd start to just feel calm, just going there. And then a little excited on the way home. And I kind of go and hide in my room with a 12-pack, you know. And then I'd start drinking, you know. And then I'd run out quickly, you know. And then I'd have to hobble back down to maybe a different 7-Eleven, whatever, on and on and on, you know. And that's just how things went. And what began to change at some point in all of this was the effect that alcohol was giving me or producing or whatever. It began to change. And there wasn't as much hope and there wasn't as much release. And I was drinking and I felt like I couldn't get drunk, even though I couldn't speak the human language. You know, you couldn't understand anything I was saying. You know, I couldn't walk. That's terrible. God, it was just a falling. I was always falling down. You know, I was falling down, getting liquored up and just fall, cut myself. People be like, yeah, you know, it's just terrible. I go to work. One time my boss, I came to work and my eye was just gross. I mean, I'd fallen down and I don't know, whatever. I couldn't wait tables with this wound. He put a Band-Aid over my eye and drew some eyelashes on it. Kind of funny. I mean, I thought that was pretty funny then, but thinking about it now, it's like, that's just really embarrassing to walk to wait tables with this white, like, mash-looking type bandage on your eye with these weird Romanian eyebrows drawn on it, you know, while you're still drunk serving food to people. I don't know. I guess I thought that was pretty cute or something. But I didn't care, you know. He didn't tell me I had to quit drinking, you know. He didn't threaten, you know, the thing that was most important. He didn't tell me I had to quit or lose my job. You know, I just was, it just was what it was. And I just accepted the things that were happening that came along with the drinking. That's what drinking commands, you know. And but it started to change, and I could not seem to get the switch to flick in my brain anymore. I would just get so drunk, but I couldn't find the peace. It was like I just lost in the drinking, and it just wasn't working like it did. I could not seem to get excited about it. It was just more and more, but I couldn't stop. I didn't want to stop. I wasn't somebody that was trying to stop all the time. It wasn't somebody that was trying to quit. It wasn't like, Billy, I'm going to quit today. I'm done, baby. It wasn't my MO. I was more of, it's none of your business. If you don't like it, lump it. You know, I'm just not going to participate in a relationship with you anymore. I was just pushing people out of my life. And that would continue into sobriety, you know, just have conflicts with people. But anyway, something happened. I don't know. I mean, my mom showed up at my place one time when I was living in Oregon Hill. If you're familiar with Richmond, you know the neighborhood, and it's where a lot of folks like me live. I don't know how else to put it. Not everybody in Oregon Hill's a bed, wet, and blackout, really alcoholic, you know, like I am. But I mean, you know, we're plentiful in that area, you know. And I thought it was great moving to Oregon Hill. I was like, man, this is awesome. My brother lived there with a couple of his friends right down the street. We were always getting drunk in their little cul-de-sac, just setting crap on fire, just getting drunk in the streets. You know, I was just crazy living. I was like, this is going to be a blast. And so my mom shows up at my place. I'd only been there like a month or so. And it was a morning where I was already drinking, you know, and I was on the couch, man, I remember my hands were kind of like this, you know, on some sort of makeshift coffee table. You know, I was just uniquely liquored up. I don't know if the book has another word for it. I was uniquely depressed, maybe, or something. But she kind of comes in unannounced with a lot of AA literature and starts talking to me about my drinking. And it wasn't the first person to discuss drinking with me. This was one of the first times where I guess I just listened. And when she left, I began to consider what it would be like to be sober and it was forever. Like I never really considered the forever part before. Like one time I'd stopped for most of a month because my friends had an intervention and they were like, this is this. And I was like, all right, you know? And so I did my best to make it a month. It's just smoked weed the whole time. Nobody cared about that. Nobody cared about that. And they're just like, you know, you gotta stop drinking, man. You're just falling down all the place and you're a liability everywhere you go and all this. And I remember when I started drinking again, I was just like, man, it was like a Christmas like I had never had before. I was just like, oh, thank God. You know, it was just such a relief. You know, and part of me believed it was going to be a little different. Like, you know, this was good. Man, I took a little breather, you know, and in a short period of time, I was right back, you know. I mean, I just didn't know. I remember that was the one period of time in my life where I really remember trying to actively control how much I would go to the bar. I would have two beers and every time, well, maybe we'll have two beers and two shots. And then the recipe would always change, would continue to change, you know. And I just couldn't keep it up, you know. Because the way I like to drink is I don't want any of this restrictions, man. Who wants all that? You know, non-alcoholics, man, they just live a different life. I mean, they don't have this thing inside of them. I'm familiar with many non-alcoholics. I got lots of non-alcoholics in my life. My neighbors are, all of them, I think, are non-alcoholic. I haven't seen anybody doing any of the crap that I used to do in my neighborhood. So I think we're safe, right? I'm just tucked away. I'm on reserve, injured reserve right now. So I've got non-alcoholics in my workplace. I see them drink all the time. Once in a while, they get a little naughty, but nobody's like giving them grief for it. You know, it's not like they have something inside of them that just is a natural part of their composition that just seems to be able to, it's like a shut off valve, man. It's like it's like a thermostat in a car for keeping it cool. I mean, it just, that thing goes off and they just cool off. They're good. I don't have that. And the idea of that bothers me. I mean, I want what I want when I want it. I don't want anybody to tell me anything about it. You know, the more the better, the more often the better. So there's something broken. And I began to think about what life would be like after my mom left without any drinks. And I have to say hello to everybody on all these Zoom people. What's up? That looks like you're eating dinner there. Right on. Well, we'll be eating dinner later. So there you go. It's not the Bavarian chef, is it? No. Okay. So she leaves. I start thinking about life sober, and it's terrifying. Life sober is a terrifying concept. And it's like, how is that even going to happen? How am I going to ever go on a date? How am I going to enjoy some delicious takeout? How am I going to, you know, do whatever it is I'm going to do? How am I ever going to, I mean, I'm listening, thinking of things that it wasn't like I was dating material or going out to eat in nice restaurants, man. I'm like trying to dry out my futon every day, shaking out people's couches for money to go buy, you know, Magnum malt liquor, you know, because I can't afford Budweiser. Jesus. And so I mean, like, so I'm worried about things that haven't happened in a long time, you know, and are never going to happen on the track that I'm on. But this is what we think about when we're contested with sober living. Sober living just sounds like there's never going to be any fun. Really, I think all what's behind that is like there's not going to be any peace. You know, at least the hope for peace is better than knowing I'm never going to get any peace if I quit drinking. Because boy, if you've ever been in without drink and you needed it, which when you're ever you're without it, you need it, right? I mean, that's how it was for me. I don't know. I knew a guy. His name's Brad. He was I forget that 50 cent word they use. It's like he's like a periodic, or he's a I don't know what it is. Anyway, he would drink really hard for a couple of days, and then he would just leave alone for a few weeks. So whatever that person is, he's alcoholic, I promise. And Brad was a bad drunk, just like me, except it was just in spurts. And I forgot the point of the story. Well, now you know Brad's story. There you go. God's like, don't talk about Brad. It's not your business. It's totally your story. Bad gossip about poor Brad. But anyway, yeah, I'm not like that. I'm not like that at all. I didn't have that going on for me. I just drank all the time, and I was just terrified of being sober. And it was just kind of like this balancing thing, you know. But some part of me at that point in that evening, the only thing I can really recall was like thinking, I thought about the period of time that I've been without drink, that 20 some odd days, most of the month or whatever. I was like, you know, some things did get kind of better. You know, I found a job, people got off my back, you know, I like wasn't waking up in the morning with this terror and stuff and whatever else. It's very foggy, but whatever was going on, the scales tipped slightly, and for the next 5 days I didn't drink after she left. And after that, I continued doing all the other stuff I was doing. I was just smoking a bunch of weed and stuff. And I started drinking a lot of sharps. You know, I was just like, boy, I developed a thirst for the sharps unknown to the modern man. It was intense. Sharps is delicious, man. It was just like, you know, I could wake up, have a couple of sharps, get going. You know, it's just like, it was what it was. I wasn't coming to AA. I didn't look at any of the literature my mom brought me. I wasn't interested. I just was like, I'm good. You know, this is what surprised me. People around me were pleasantly and surprisingly happy with what we had been brought to them. You know, this high as a bat person drinking, you know, sharps all the time. And it was an improvement. I mean, I will tell you, it was an improvement from where I was, big time. Started gaining some weight, you know. I was smiling all the time. I was hungry, eating all the time, you know, whatever. Just, you know, I just seemed to be a little kind of comfortable, was relaxed, you know. And, but over a period of time, a day at a time, it was starting to wear me out, you know. And I met this girl, and she was like, I'm not going to date you I don't date people that smoke, you know, grass. I was like, fine. So I let that stuff go. And then, you know, shortly afterwards, she was gone, you know, as it goes. And I remember just feeling kind of like, maybe I should go to an AA meeting. It just kind of popped into my head. Don't know why. And I did. I went to my first AA meeting the day after Christmas in 99. And I went and I was just blown away. It was unbelievable. I mean, it was just a very, very powerful experience. I went down to 210. And this is a place where I just don't, if you were to look aesthetically, I don't fit in. I'm not the same. I mean, it's just different. It was different than everybody there, man. Most people, you know. just different ethnicity, different this, different that. And I could not have felt more at home in my life. It was unbelievable. It didn't matter what people were or saying or doing. I mean, well, what they were saying was important, but it didn't matter any of this other stuff. It was irrelevant. There was a message there that got to me because they were talking about the truth about their alcoholism. Hopefully what we're doing this evening, they talked about what alcohol had done for them, to them, how it made them feel, the things that were going on with them in sobriety. And they had my complete attention. And it was like, it was unbelievable. I just was sucked into that. I just was going to 210 every single day. At one point, they were kind of like kicking the bird out of the nest. They're like, you probably should try some other meetings, kid. I was like, I'm good, right here, a couple guys pulled me aside and they were, talking to me and helping me out. And it was just amazing. I'll never forget it. It was really something. I mean, I just hadn't been through anything like that before. I didn't know what to expect. I think I came to my first AA meeting probably because loneliness was really driving me at that point, looking back. And I don't know any other reason, maybe God or something, I don't know. But I tried to get in the business of assigning what I think God has done or not done for me or for you, because I might be wrong. I probably am wrong. Yeah. But something happened. And I remember being very lonely, very separate, because if you're not drinking, you're drinking sharps, you're still drinking. Now I'm going to the bar after work. I'm sitting there and I'm having duels or whatever. And people running off to different bars and going down to the ODC club. And I wasn't doing all that kind of thing. And I just would kind of come home and wake up and do it all over again. So I came to this AA meeting and I was probably thinking about maybe if I might find a girlfriend at the AA meeting, which we all know how that kind of works out if you're brand new, probably not too well. But none of that stuff happened or whatever. What I did come here and I found were people that were talking about alcoholism and really the first step and what it means to be an alcoholic. And none of them seemed to be concerned about being an alcoholic. For God's sakes, they were all laughing, having a good time. They're just talking about crazy stuff, man. There's this guy, Matthew, who's doing the chips all the time, and guy named Andrew, and I don't know. There's just a bunch of dudes down there that had just been there for a while running 210, man. And it was just funny. And they were just laughing all the time and making jokes and jabbing at each other. And somebody would start talking about, something other than drinking. They'd just tell them to shut up all the time. They would just shut them down. It was just beautiful. And I just thought that was funny. I was like, somebody just told you to shut up. Don't talk about that. I'm like, I don't know why, And they were doing that because they did not want to have a meeting where the message of AA was getting muddled up with a bunch of other crap. End of story. This is for alcohol and alcoholism. And I'll tell you what, man, I got so lucky. I was so lucky to go to a meeting where that was the message, because I'm a desperate alcoholic, man. I just am. I don't know how many meetings I've been to when they're running off in the left field about something else. I don't have any problem with the program. I'm talking about what's important for me as an alcoholic and Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I really need to hear a message that I identify with. That's what hooked me when I got here for the first time. That's what continues. I love it when I go hear a speaker and they tell some bizarre story about the way they were obsessed with alcohol and all the little twists and turns of it. I mean, it's the thing that just, I know I'm in the right spot for one more 24 hours, man. I mean, I know that I've done the right thing by being here. And because alcoholism is a weird thing. There's many different things our brains do, and our brains are all different in, so many different ways. But in mine, there's a lot of weirdness when it comes to the drink. There always has been. So I just was super lucky to be in a meeting where they took, the traditions very seriously. And our primary purpose and our singleness of purpose were foremost. I didn't know that what was going on, but that's what it was. And I kept coming, man, and it was great. And I did start going to other AA meetings. I didn't want to really do anything, I just was like, I'm going to work, drinking some sharps, starting to read this big book, using it as a coaster for my sharps. And a guy in the meeting, I told somebody, I was like, I would drink sharps, it was no big deal, whatever. He's like, oh, kind of gave me that look, He's like, oh, it was Shane. And I don't know I forgot what he said. He said something like, it's going to get you drunk or something. And he started talking about hand on the hot stove. I remember that. I was like, don't touch the damn thing. What's wrong with you? but I didn't understand the literature at all. I hadn't read the book. I could barely read. I could barely talk at this point. I mean, my brain was just not working the right way. I really had a difficult time cognitively. I mean, I could drive and get places, but I was not functioning, man. I mean, it was weird. It was just a very weird time coming off of drinking. But after hearing that from him, it started bothering me. I was coming to meetings and I keep planted a seed, so to speak. And at some point the drinking just stopped. It just stopped at work. My last drink was a half of an Old Duels Amber on July or January 19th, you know, and my sobriety date follows that. And after that, everybody's like, get a sponsor. You know, I don't want to get a sponsor. You know, I just didn't want to do that either. I didn't want to pick up chips or I didn't want to do anything except just go to this 210 place. But eventually I just was like, okay. And I did ask somebody to be my sponsor. And then everything changed at that point, you know, had a huge change of a turn of events. That man showed me how to behave in AA, showed me how to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous, showed me what to do, told me what not to do. He said, definitely not going to be dating anybody. He's like, stay away from all that. And I did pretty good. You know, I didn't start wrecking his life with relationship horrors until I was about a year, some change. So, I mean, I'm just being silly about all that, but it's true. I mean, he just knew what to do with somebody like me. He's just a blackout drinker himself, man. Some of y'all probably remember Basil from back in the day. And he just was a very kind of a fundamental kind of guy and really straightforward. And man, he really saved my life. And he really kind of just gave me an outline for daily living and daily actions in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had an endless amount of one-liners, you know, it was always, you know, if you're not the problem, there is no solution. You know, spirituality is action. Action is a magic word. Feelings aren't facts, you know, blah, 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 on and on and on. You know, the most important thing you can do, Eric, is to do what you say you're going to do and say you're going to do it. You know, and just constantly just hit me with these small spiritual truths, you know, that were very digestible. Some of them weren't. Some of these things, I just, my brain couldn't get around. But, you know, for the most part, I could follow what he was saying. And I just followed him around. And he took me through the steps. I got through some sort of an inventory, if you want to call it that. I don't know really exactly. It's probably more your inventory than anything else. But whatever happened, it was enough. And I got to stay sober through that first year. And I made a bunch of amends to people. You know, you come in here. I came in and I was heavy on shame in a lot of areas of my life. I was very, you know, as we are, or maybe as we're not. I don't know for you. I can't speak for you. But that's just how I came in, wrapped in a lot of that. Because I was remembering a lot of things and I was thinking about people and, you know, I wasn't drunk anymore. I just was aware of my most recent behavior prior to coming to AA and knowing I had to go clean some things up that were kind of tough. I knew there were some employers that I was going to have to go see that I didn't want to go see because I just had a circus in their environment, you know, and just different people that I owed money to and, you know, different couches that needed to be cleaned because of me and different, you know, different this and that and all this stuff. And I was getting, you know, but I went and he walked me through all that. And when I say he walked me through that, Basil said, there is no waiting around for all of your amends. I want you to just pick up the phone. You're going to start calling people and you're going to make appointments to go see people. You're going to go set appointments and go see them and make the amends. End of discussion. That was it. And that's what I did. I put the toughest ones at the top. I just was how my brain was working. I'm like, I'm just going to do that. I went and did it, you know, I went to see my first amends as this restaurant guy. And I just, it was just a big, lots of fear, but I made it through all this stuff, you know, and at least the first round of it. And I started kind of doing different things in AA as far as like, I went down to Ocracoke for a conference. When I was about 9 months sober. That was crazy. I just couldn't imagine being, I don't know, what are you going to do in a house with a bunch of other dudes for a week. I mean, or a weekend, like that just doesn't sound like a lot of fun or very comfortable. But that was a great time. I had a wonderful time down there and went for a few more years. But I remember hitting a year sober. I remember thinking, what could possibly be next? I mean, I finally picked up the blue chip, found the steps. What else could there be? You know, boy, has there been so much, you know, it's interesting. I remember distinctly thinking that. And now I'm like, man, I was a year sober I was living in a fam somewhere and living in an apartment. My sponsor made me buy a new car because mine was not sober. I'll put it that way. It was not a sober vehicle. Lots of things got sober in that first year, man. Yeah, my bills started getting sober, man. My car insurance got sober. All kinds of things were just getting sober. And I got this new car and I was sitting in there. I got this apartment that was already painted, didn't need to be fixed up. It was just ready to go. It was a sober apartment. It was nice. And I had many moments thinking, Jesus, I cannot believe how I'm living now compared to what was going on. You know, I hadn't thought about drinking almost the whole first year. There are several times when my sponsor thought that I was going to drink. And I remember distinctly thinking, I don't know what you're so worked up about. But being a sponsor, sponsoring men over the years, I know what he's talking about. I mean, like I've seen, you can see things in people they can't see, or they, you know, it's interesting. And you can't stop anything from happening, but you can see it. And so he was seeing some things, I'm sure. But the main, he was like, you're going to get drunk. I was like, I didn't argue with him yet. He looked like this. He looked like Santa Claus, but he was like this Russian teamster from Jersey. I had no idea because he was always just like so kind of like put together and meaning. You get him as a sponsor, and he's just like, you know. But he was loving in his way. You know, it was good. And so after a year, I started dating, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that happened like three or so times in the next 3 years or whatever. I wasn't continuing to practice, you know, I think what our literature talks about, growth in a relationship in God. And I really got sick in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going to 15,000 AA meetings a week, calling my sponsor, calling all kinds of people in AA, super busy. And I was just suffering because I was just, you can't, like Sammy told me, she was my next sponsor. She's like, Eric, there's no right way to do the wrong thing. In fact, she gave me like an embroidered plaque. It's by my front door. I should probably move it to where I absolutely see that every day. I mean, it's there, but you know, usually I'm not. But I read a bunch and anyway. But she's like, there's no right way to do the wrong thing, you know, and that's exactly what I spent a lot of time doing, you know, and it just was running around doing what we do. And I was, you know, newly sober and just was crazy. You know, I just hadn't changed. I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I've never really done much of an inventory, I don't think. And I don't know. You know, nothing can really change in me unless I really believe I'm wrong. I've had that experience a couple of times, like really heavy, where it's just hit me with a weight that I'm really wrong about something and a change has happened. Like I remember being at odds with my brother and being in heavy judgment with him about what he was doing. And I didn't see it that way. But then in one conversation I did. And it just changed my entire perspective in a matter of seconds. I was just like, and we've been good ever since. I mean, it was just like, I stopped acting like a jerk. Thank God. But darn, man, Sam, it took me about a year and a half to get there, baby. Lord, God, I mean, I was just like, I was so right, you know, in all my thinking about this thing. And, you know, whenever I'm so right, I'm just so full of judgment. It's just terrible. It's a heavy weight. But I've had some situations happen like that. You know, anyway. But so I just was in a mess, you know, and I had and things with Basil and I weren't working out anymore. So I got a new sponsor. I ended up working with Sammy and man, I will tell you, everything changed. I did not expect her to be my sponsor. I just was like, I needed some help because I couldn't. I'd been to therapy at some point, 2 years sober. I was starting to read some outside literature because the steps weren't working. Now I'm reading all kinds of impressive books, but you know, none of those things seemed to kind of address this problem of self, you know, this bondage of self that I suffer from that AA seems to do so well. And she took me through our basic text and everything changed again. It's like I had never even seen the book before, really. I mean, I just couldn't believe what was written in there. And I never really had seen it. I've been reading it on my own and I just didn't have the ability to see it, I guess. I don't know, but I was in a perfect state of desperation. And I just did not really, my biggest problem was I just didn't see where I was powerless over alcohol. It was kind of a scary thought at that point of being about 4 years sober to realize that I didn't have any ability to control my drinking. And she pointed that out. She's like, you know, who is keeping you sober? Is it you? And I'm like, well, I'm going to all the meetings. You know, I'm praying, you know, you know, and I just got mixed up. I don't know how that happened, but I mean, I guess really most of the problems I have today, you boil it down, they really do come down to a first step problem. It's a little deep. I'm not trying to get all heavy, but it really truly is. It's like, if I really believe that I'm powerless over alcohol, then where is the struggle with anything else? You know, if I really believe that I don't have the ability to leave here tonight with Walter and James, and we're going to go get a good liquor and up in the old Seabill tonight, you know, what is preventing the car from going and doing that? You know, why is that not happening? Is it because I've made some good decisions? Is it because I'm acutely aware of what happens to me and I've got self-knowledge? You know, is it because I'm going to make it home, boys? I'm going to exert my will. You know, am I just so terrified of drinking that that's not going to happen? And I don't believe it. You know, I don't believe it. I mean, I believe Bill's story. He outlines those three things as failed for him. And I look back through my life. I don't think that I'm not smart enough to see the writing on the wall, but I do believe that I'm delusional enough to see it accurately. Like I just, you can tell, people were telling me the information was accurate about what was going on with me when I drank. I was getting it from all ends, everybody, but I couldn't believe it. I just didn't have it in me to see it. I could not. It was not inside of me. That's messed up. I mean, we talked to a guy tonight. We talked to this kid, and he's a little delusional, understandably slow. Understandably so, not slow. And, you know, he's got a little trouble of the heart. Hand of God. You know, I know how that goes, right? And we all do. And it does. It's tough. It's tough to see the truth about that stuff. It's tough to see the truth about drinking, you know? And you just, there's no telling anybody when they're in that. They just kind of have to come through and make something's got to happen for themselves to the point where the scale will tip. I got super lucky. Sometimes I'm wondering, like, why am I even sober, man? How's that even possible? You know? How's that even possible? You know, I don't think I was chosen. I don't think there's, you know, any of that kind of thing. I just can't say that about God. I was like, why would that, you know, that doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway, something did happen though. I got clear on this first step problem. I didn't think of that stuff at all before. And I was scared. I was like, man, well, if I'm not keeping me sober, we got a real problem. Because if you're saying it's God, screw him. Because I'm, you know, that's a bunch of, you know what, you know? I was pretty upset, and it was only because I was playing God, really, in all areas of life. And just, I'm not here to take you through the steps or anything. I just will tell you that I was willing. I made a decision, took a real, most accurate inventory I ever had. I shared it with Sammy. She shared a lot of things with me that made a lot of sense. I finally had a list of things that were messed up about me that I had never seen before with any level of truth. You know, I was willing to ask God to have these things removed. I had a list of people that I'd harmed. I cleaned those up the best I could. And I started practicing, you know, getting quiet, getting wrong, and getting useful with those people around me in my life, you know, on a daily basis. I can't run around and just make a mess, not clean it up, and be able to get all kumbaya on the couch every morning while the heap piles up around me. I can't do that. It's a tough way to live. There are things that are objectionable for me today that weren't objectionable in my first year of sobriety. I mean, that's probably as it should be. There's just without me knowing it, some things have changed that I can't be a certain way because of whatever God in AA does to you when you get here, if you're willing to go through with this process. And so things have changed. I mean, there's some things that have changed. Doesn't mean it's always, you know, 100% change. It just means that for today, you know, there's a lot of things that are different, man. I might go home and do something goofy tonight. I don't know. But the difference is that, am I going to go clean up the mess today so I can continue to try to be clear to receive some kind of inspiration from this mysterious power that's been keeping me sober, you know? And do I really believe that that's going to work? I don't know. I mean, it's pretty easy to think that, well, if God has removed this obsession to drink, then why can't he do everything and anything else? And I think that I and many of the friends that I talk to, a few close confidants, we kind of struggle with, well, we kind of kid back and forth. We're like, yeah, maybe it's my week to be like, yeah, screw God. And my friends are like, it's because you're not getting what you want. And then the next week I'm like, well, That's just because you're not getting what you want, bro. God's just fine. You know, you're just doing you, baby. You got to tighten up, you know? And that's how a lot of those conversations go. But maybe that's how it's supposed to be. I don't know. My sponsor says you got to want the prayers to work here. I'm like, I do want it to work, Victor. I want it to work a lot, you know? I really do. And I don't know. I'm not too worried about it. I don't need to worry so much about that kind of thing. I think the only time I need to worry in AA is if I don't show up to AA. I think that's really where the problem starts. Mm-hmm. I think that's really the thing. That's probably always the beginning of things, man. It's just like, if I don't have commitments here and I don't continue to show up for those types of commitments, whatever type of struggle I have, you know, will probably become paramount, you know, and it'll just take over. That's pretty true. That's been true of lots of friends I've had in AA, people I've sponsored. But I sound like I'm being the Grim Reaper. Well, yeah, just don't leave AA, you're going to struggle, you know. I mean, there's been amazing things that have happened in my sobriety. It's just unbelievable. I mean, there's all kinds of material things that have come and gone, you know, but there are things that have happened. Like I'm a part of society. I'm a homeowner. I feel like having a home is a spiritual thing. That's a place for me to take care of. And the state felt like that was an okay thing for me to get a loan and get one. So that was great. You know, it's awesome. I've been able to pay my bills. I've been able to save money in a retirement account. I've been in the same job for the last 18 years, which is crazy. You know, my family is like 50-50, a mess and also awesome at the same time. You know, it's just some big challenges there for me with my family. And I have friends all over the country. I've got friends that are in different parts of the world because I've been able to go do a bunch of traveling and all this kind of thing. My imagination has been fired to the point of distraction. Like, I feel like I'm running out of time, man. There's so many things I want to do. I remember being afraid of, like, if I'm not drinking all day on my day off, what am I going to do? God, I was like, sobriety, what are you going to do on your day off? Because I was like, day off is like Christmas, baby. It's like, you know, I'll wake up just drunk and excited because, like, I get to just go to the store, buy all the booze I can, and come home and drink it all. Day off, you know? And now it's like, I don't know, things just pop up all the time. I don't have any real restrictions on imagination and creativity and things, you know, and it's awesome. You know, I've had all kinds of new interests that have come about that I would never have thought of for myself. You know, I was able to, I don't want to say I was able to, but I don't know. I'll just say this: smoking stopped, you know, nicotine use stopped at some point, which is great, but when it became objectionable, you know. Mm-hmm. All kinds of other obsessions have come and gone, you know, and it's been good. You know, it's good to not be obsessed. I was so obsessed with drinking, you know, and you get sober and then you get all obsessed with relationships or money or whatever, you know. It's a heavy thing to kind of carry around all the time. I can't not participate actively in life with that. So I've had quite a bit of relief from that. And I get to experience something different, which is interest, you know, and that's a whole different kind of thing. You know, interest is different because I can take a step back from that, man, be like, all right, we've had enough interest for today. You know, maybe let's go to an AA meeting, you know. So lots of things have happened in my personal, professional, and whatever world. But there's a lot of peace in my life today. There's a lot of concern about how much time maybe do I have left, not because there's anything wrong. I don't know. My friend Corey died a few years ago, about 5 years ago, and I loved her so much. And she was a super solid A member. I think she probably came and spoke here. I don't know if she did. I think she did. And we dated on and off for maybe a year or so, and she died suddenly. It was really challenging because it just did not. I couldn't figure out. I kind of shifted all the weight to God. I was like, how could that be possible? Here's somebody that prays constantly, has more faith that things are going to work out, you know, than I ever, you know. I mean, Jesus, it was just like nothing like having coffee in the morning and talking to her about things that are spiritual, whatever, because she just, and she had a condition that was not curable other than alcoholism. It was just a constant nuisance and to the point of just aggravating pain in her life. And she's always seemed to hold out hope for it, you know? And I mean, I just was like, God, man, how does somebody even do that? And like, how, it really kind of shook me, you know, just as far as, and I've seen that with other people. It's always easy to go, well, God didn't do that, you know? And my sponsor did sort of take that approach with me, but he sent me this book and had me read a book that he had read and some things that happened that he just couldn't understand. It's called The Will of God. And I don't care if it's outside a piece of literature, you know, it's a damn good book. And, you know, so I don't think anybody here is worried about that. We all know what the book talks about with outside literature. You should go for it. You should explore it. You should seek where you can seek. And it really shifted like my perspective a little bit on things and on that situation. And so I wasn't hanging it up on all that, but it just, I don't know why. There are many times I miss her very much. And it just was one of those unfortunate things. I don't even want to talk about it, but you know, I guess because her faith was just such a big deal and she had so many challenges. It's like, why can't my faith be just a little bit better? Jesus Christ, I got all kinds of good things going on. Like, I got a picture of Jesus in the bathroom, baby. Come on, you know? But I just was like, anyway. So it's just been it just is what it is with all that. I continue to seek. A lot of my life has changed with that. I spend a lot of time in the morning. Sometimes I get distracted, but I always spend time reading and praying with intent because I do believe that that works. I'll say the last 2 weeks have been interesting because I've come off of this, or I'm coming out of this thing of thinking that prayers don't work. Now more into, okay, let's do some digestible prayers and see if they're going to work. And so, you know, my prayer in the morning is like, please help me remain calm today. Please remove arrogance. Please remove self-righteousness. Please remove judgment. You know, having to be right and knowing best. And so collectively, those things for me, we can kind of get that into God's mechanical world, or his spiritual world, I should say. And, you know, so if I can get some help there, that's good. I'll tell you, the last couple weeks have been good, man. I was telling Victor, I was like, man, I've had lots of situations at work and with people over the last couple of weeks where normally I do something where I got to go clean up the mess later, or I do something and then I lose a lot of sleep over it because I didn't clean it up, and where I've reacted differently or I haven't reacted at all. And I've like caught myself. And I'm like, that's crazy. I'm like, you know, I'll be in a situation at work and it's always somebody's not doing what I think they should be doing to help me get what I want. And I just start getting real fault-finding and arrogant with them and manipulative. And I'll just start, you know, talking down to them or just, I don't know, just really disgusting. Being a bully, which I just can't despise that kind of stuff. I have to turn to this thing I don't want to be. And it's just kind of stopped. So I'm like, all right, this is good, man. We're going to keep going in this direction, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, in my mind, it's like when this stuff is happening, it's just I'm flooded with this. Like I have a physical reaction. It's just like I feel it inside of me when I'm threatened or irritated and I can't seem to stop it. And I'm telling my sponsor about this and he's probably just throwing his hand. He doesn't know, you know, he's maybe moved past it or he understands. There's just a moment where I almost have to kiss. As I told him, it's like I just catch myself before, and I've pushed it down before and like not reacted, but I still go away and I'm still just pissed off later, you know. Lately, it's just a little different. So I don't know. I'll have to come back to you in a couple of months and give you a little report. So see you in February, baby. What's up? You know? But I'm hoping for the best, you know, and I don't know. We'll just see. You know, I don't know. I just don't know any other way to live, though, without doing what I don't know any other option. I don't really feel like as an alcoholic there are any other successful options. There's probably many other roads to go explore and travel. But it seems like the folks in AA, not only are most of you, I'm sensing that you identify with what I'm talking about, but a lot of you have probably been through a lot of this stuff, at least the people that are ahead of me that I talk to, and you found some success in prayer in solving some of these things, or you found some success in something in this. And I see that more here. And again, I don't really know. I think some other literature is interesting to read from time to time, but most of it never really touches me. There's some things that do, But even that doesn't ever really, I don't know, alcoholics are just a little bit different, man. We are, you know, we're something about us. At least I am like you. And so when I, at least when I talk to you about something crazy, it almost kind of diffuses it right there. Like my weekly call with my sponsors, 5:45 every Wednesday. You know, I'm pretty much on it once in a while on the blue moon, but I'm on that call. And it's good because it's like I tell about what's been going on and it just kind of diffuses it, you know, to some degree. And then it usually requires a little bit more than that. But once I start talking about it, I'm on the right road. You know, I just am. I can't keep anything. And there isn't anything about me he doesn't know. All of the shameful, disgusting thoughts and things that I have, I shouldn't really beat up myself. We all have problems in the areas of sex, security, society. I always have and always will. And I'm certain that many of you are the same way. And the solution here in AA seems to be working for it, though, because I just don't know what else I can do. Like, I don't have the ability. I've tried to, like, will myself to not do some things, and the power just isn't there. I've had that experience, man. I've also had the experience. The fact that I'm physically sober is proof in itself, again, to where my power, my willpower was non-existent. I didn't even want to quit drinking. And I came into AA and started doing some things here and it left, you know, so I have proof there. So I'm very happy to be here tonight. Think I'm all out. And thanks again.